Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading stories from May 28th through June 3rd. We'll start with the article headlined, Foodmobile Drive-Thru Saturday in Bement, June 3rd. Eastern Illinois Food Bank, EIF, is distributing food to area families struggling with food insecurity, including a drive-thru distribution from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, June 6th, at Bement High School, 201 South Champaign Street, Bement. In compliance with CDC guidelines, clients will remain in their cars and boxes of food will be loaded into their vehicle by volunteers. Clients should clear space in their trunk or back seat prior to arriving at the distribution to prevent contact. The distribution is part of USDA's Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, CFAP. A program designed to keep workers in the food industry employed while providing people in need with access to food. The distribution will include one or a combination of the following prepackaged boxes: mixed box of produce, mixed box of dairy items, box with pre-cooked meal or meat. Anyone who is in need of food is welcome to attend the food distribution. Those planning to attend should pre-register at www.eifclient.com, although doing so does not guarantee a place in line. Updates regarding EIF's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, including future food distributions, can be found at the food bank's website at www.eifoodbank.org/news. Monticello names elementary principals for 2021-22. By Steve Hoffman, June 3rd. Monticello has appointed its two elementary school principals for 2021 through 22, the first year the district trims from three buildings to two. Nancy Rosenberry will continue to be the administrator at the fourth and fifth grade level, but will do so at White Heath School instead of the Washington Elementary Building in Monticello. Emily Widener, the current second, third grade principal at White Heath, will be the kindergarten through third grade administrator at an expanded Washington building. We're going from three elementary buildings down to two. We wanted to officially name those principals, said Monticello School Superintendent Vic Zimmerman. The recommendation was approved by the school board on May 20th. As part of the current $35 million construction and renovation project in Monticello, an elementary school classroom wing is being added to Washington. When completed by the fall of 2021-22, the 1911-era Lincoln Building will be closed. Zimmerman said an assistant principal will be needed at the new Washington configuration, which will also house the district preschool program. While an official decision on that appointment will not take place until next spring, current Lincoln principal Mary Voigt is a front-runner for that post. She will likely be recommended to be the assistant principal at Washington and the pre-K director. But we won't do that until next spring, he said. There will be 540 students there, so we will have to have one. Zoning Board asks for clarification in regards to wind energy ordinance changes. By Steve Hoffman, June 3rd. An amended wind ordinance for Piatt County is back in the hands of the county board, after the Zoning Board of Appeals asked for clarification on its rewrite. Amendments to the Wind Energy Conversion Ordinance, first approved in 2009, have been under consideration for about a year as Apex Clean Energy considers a 300-megawatt project for northern Piatt County. Proposed ordinance changes have gone back and forth between the ZBA and County Board during the ongoing rewrite process, the latest involving around allowable noise levels and setbacks. In March, the Zoning Board leaned towards sticking with more stringent proposals on those two items until more research is conducted. The County Board, 2 weeks later, approved a modified fee schedule for large-scale wind energy projects as recommended by the Zoning Board, but referred other text amendments such as noise and setbacks back to the ZBA. The question is, what did they send back to you? Said Zoning Administrator Carrie Nussbaum. The confusion is apparently over whether zoning board members need to review just the noise level and setback sections, a larger swath of issues, or the entire ordinance itself. Minutes of the March 11th County Board meeting state a motion was approved that the amendments be sent back to the Zoning Board of Appeals for review. We are asking the County Board to give us more specific direction as to what they want on the WECS ordinance revision, said ZBA Chairman Lloyd Wax at the May 28th meeting of the Zoning Board, conducted by Zoom. A motion to ask for clarification was approved 3-0 by the ZBA and should be on the agenda for the June 10th meeting of the County Board. Apex official Alan Moore felt the County Board motion was clear-cut and requires the entire ordinance to be reviewed again by the ZBA. I did want to make sure it was clear that the minutes from the meeting were, as recorded, that the County Board voted to send all of the amendments back to the ZBA for review, said Moore. It seemed pretty clear from the County Board minutes that the County Board sent back the entire ordinance for review. Last year, the ZBA recommended noise levels generated by wind turbines be no more than 30 decibels at neighboring properties. A recommendation to consider 50 decibels was made, but after public testimony, the board recommended keeping it at 30 decibels, at least for now. As for setbacks, Apex had said that a proposed amendment to require setbacks of 3.75 times the tower tip height, or 1,600 feet from the edge of wind towers, whichever is greater, could be difficult to meet for its 120 turbine Goose Creek wind proposal. One recommendation was to reduce setbacks to 1.1 times the tower tip height, or 1,600 feet, whichever is greater. But the ZBA again sided with the stricter 3.75 ratio at this point. County resident Dave Oliger thanked the ZBA for its careful consideration of the issue. I'd just like to thank the ZBA members for all your hard work on this ordinance and to keep the health and welfare and property rights of residents in mind. I urge the County Board to pass the ordinance as written, he said, referring to the version that had allowed noise levels and larger setbacks. I appreciate the leadership of the County Board and the ZBA in moving forward, added Moore. Jane Evans took time during public comment to speak up for wind energy. As a landowner, I feel they should consider this is a good thing for the community, said Evans. I throw my support to the Goose Creek Wind Corporation so they know that I want that to happen. I want their windmills to be put in. Where is our energy going to come from if we don't go to the windmills, she added. Apex Clean Energy has not filed yet for the permits it would need to install windmills, which would be located in the northern portion of the county. It estimates the project would result in a $400 million investment and generate about $65 million for county taxing bodies over 30 years. In other action, the board recommended the approval of a variance to allow Tim Moniker to construct a 54-by-90-foot shed 25 feet from the road on agriculturally zoned land at 1473 East 2350 North Road near White Heath. Zoning ordinance requires a 50-foot setback without a variance. Approved a special use permit to allow T.J. Shambaugh IV to exceed the county's 45-foot height limits in construction of grain storage facilities at 856 North Highway 32 in Cerro Gordo. Including the legs on the grain bin, the height will be 120 feet. There was no opposition presented on either issue. Both will be considered for final approval by the county board on June 10th. Monticello fills open football date by Jason Brown, June 2nd. In late January, when Monticello Activities Director Daniel Sheehan and football coach Cullen Welter heard that St. Thomas More would no longer be fielding a team, they had to scramble to fill the open slot on the schedule. Sheehan started calling schools to replace STM, but unfortunately, he was not able to find an opponent in Illinois. In my opinion, it was due to some recent success that we've had, Sheehan said. We were reaching out to schools, and we did have schools share that they weren't interested, or they were going to keep their options open. So immediately, I got with Coach Welter and assistant coach Mike Allen. Sheehan and the coaches shared documents and created a spreadsheet of potential schools to add to the schedule. They posted a call to fill the September 11th game for teams in Indiana, Wisconsin, and Iowa. They even looked at the possibility of playing a team from Missouri or Arkansas. We had a regular routine that weekly we would try to do a sweep to see if there were any other teams with an open schedule, Sheehan said. The one we were most excited about right before COVID-19 and everything took place, we had an understanding that we would play at Door County, Wisconsin, which was exciting because it was up there by Green Bay, and we figured we'd make a trip out of it and get a tour of the Green Bay faculty. Sheehan and coaches imagined the trip as a once-in-a-lifetime team bonding opportunity. But when we got back from COVID-19 and tried to reconfirm everything, they had the wrong date, Sheehan said. Different states have different weeks, and they were looking for a week 2 game, and we needed week 3. Not all states have the same calendar. Once that fell through, it was back to the drawing board. The key for Sheehan and the coaches was to add another game to the schedule. At the end of the day, we want a game for our kids, Sheehan said. We don't want to take a game away from our student athletes. Then, Sheehan got an email from a school in Osceola, Indiana, that was interested in playing the Sages. So, Sheehan researched the Osceola Grace Eagles to make sure the team matched what Monticello was looking for in a competitive game, size of school, and proper facilities. The initial email said they had to have a home game, Sheehan said. The coaching staff was going to drive up there and get an analysis of their facilities. But luckily enough, I was able to talk them into coming to Monticello for a home game. The Sages and Eagles are now under contract to play each other September 11th. The Eagles requested a later start time, so kickoff is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. The way I understand it is that it's a homeschool organization club football, Sheehan said. So it's made up of student athletes who are homeschooled in Michigan and Indiana. And the IHSA bylaws allow an out-of-state opponent that either has to be approved by the Indiana School Association or they have to be approved to play Indiana high school teams. So they're not a member of the Indiana State Association, nor do they participate in an Indiana postseason. I think they play in a national homeschool football playoff scenario that would be nationwide. The coaches have already been scouring game footage and collecting data off Max Preps about the Eagles. Monticello is scheduled to kick off its season with a home game August 28th at 7 p.m. against Olympia de Lavon. Zimmerman to lead state administrator group by Steve Hoffman, June 2nd. Monticello School Superintendent Vic Zimmerman will serve as the president of the Illinois Association of School Administrators for the 2020-21 school year. I was fortunate enough to be elected by my division to be on the IASA board, and the rotation came up for our Abraham Lincoln Super Region to provide a president, said Zimmerman. I'm honored to represent all the superintendents in the state as president of the board. Dr. Brent Clark, executive director of the IASA, thanked the Monticello School Board for sharing Zimmerman for a year, stating his opinion that 2020-21 will be the craziest year that public education has faced in the modern era. A good portion of that uncertainty revolves around whether classes will start, at least partially online in the fall, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Next year, we're not sure how it will start. And to have a steady hand like Vic at the table to be the president will be very, very important, not only for our association, but for all superintendents across the state of Illinois, said Clark. Zimmerman served as president-elect for this school year and does not anticipate his role as president will take him out of the district much more than 2019-20. If it does, he knows daily educational decisions in Monticello are in good hands. We've got such great principals in our district. They do a great job, and I don't worry that they can't handle things that come up, he said. After a year at the helm of the IASA, Zimmerman will then hold the title of past president for 2021-22, coinciding with his last year as Monticello superintendent. He recently delayed his retirement by a year to wrap up loose ends that include the district's building project, COVID-19 issues, and administrative changes. About the IASA, the Illinois Association of School Administrators, dating back to 1946, is an advocacy organization for school administrators with nearly 2,000 members. The IASA mission statement is to support school leaders in the pursuit of educational excellence through continued school improvement. Obituaries. Eileen Weaver went to be with the Lord on May 24th at the age of 82. The family received friends on Wednesday, May 27th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Schertz Funeral Home. The graveside service was held on Thursday, May 28th at 10:30 at Holy Cross Cemetery. Robert Mitchell Keefe, 50, of Monticello, passed away on May 24th. Private family services will be held with Mackie Wright Funeral Home handling the arrangements. Patrick Carter, 58, of Hammond, passed away May 26th in his home. A celebration of life will be 1 to 3 p.m. Friday, June 5th, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Cerro Gordo. Strict social distancing rules will be in place. As time goes by, week of June 3rd, 2020. June 3rd. 100 years ago, Will H. Hayes, as head of the party organization of the country since 1918, will call to order the Republican National Convention in the Coliseum at Chicago on June 8th. It is expected that this will be one of the greatest political gatherings in history, and the demand for seats is unprecedented. The community church in Lodge was the site of much activity when the pupils of 9 graded schools of the county were present to assist in a splendid program and receive their diplomas. Presenting diplomas was County Superintendent Charles McIntosh. Lodge School graduates in the higher course were Maxine Lanier, Elsie Fitzwater, Hazel Cavender, Huey Gadberry, Oak Grove School, Beatrice Riggins. The graduates of the Common School course were Lodge School, Roscoe Foster, Kenneth Spencer, Ray Timmons, Thelma Dusen, Edra Madden, Alicia Bartley, Mildred Madden, Berlin Foster, Mary E. Argo, and Lola E. Perkins. Madden School, Eva Swartz. Fairview School, Gleason, Lanier, Winfield Adams, and Gordon Adams. Pleasant Falls School, Wayne McMillan, Saburn Leishner, and Darlene Leishner. Moraine School, Thomas Kriegmer. Dighton School, Edna Parsons and Dale Hosier. Anderson School, Robert Bennett. Workmen are tearing out the front of the F.J. Mailander building. It will be replaced with plate glass and have vestibule showcase windows. The Cerro Gordo High School commencement was held at the Church of the Brethren Monday evening and was attended by a large number. The address by Dr. C.E. Jenny of Decatur on things worthwhile was very good. There were 5 girls and 1 boy in the graduating class this year. Last Wednesday afternoon, the teachers of the high school and the grades were entertained by Mr. Robert Allerton. For several weeks, we had been looking forward to the trip, for had many a time driven as far as the gate, only to have a tiny glimpse beyond. Mr. Allerton was a gracious host, taking us through his spacious home, where we were delighted by the tapestries on the walls, the costumes representing practically every nation of Europe, the rare pieces of Chinese and Japanese lacquer, and the like. The kindergarten for the children of School District No. 25 will start Monday morning, June 14th. Children between the ages of 5 and 6 years old and who have not previously attended school are entitled to attend. Eldon Buster Lord will stage a good boxing and wrestling show at the Opera House on Monday evening, June 14th. The card shows 3 boxing and 2 wrestling matches and should be a big event with fans of these sports. The Piatt County Medical Association met last Friday night. 15 doctors from other towns were present. A banquet was served at the Brady House for the association, compiled by Roger Weisgarver. 75 years ago, Captain Lyndon Combs has been discharged under the Army point system. He had 150 points accumulated. He has been in service 4 years, 2 months. He was awarded the Purple Heart Air Medal with 12 oak leaf clusters, Distinguished Flying Cross, Presidential Group Citation, and 3 bronze stars on his European Theater ribbon. A movement to organize and establish a state bank in DeLand has been reported, and many persons in that community feel the need for a bank and are interested in the move to begin one. Camp Creek Schoolhouse, south and east of White Heath, has been sold at public auction. The school, furnace and outbuildings, and the brick from the Prairie Dell School, which had burned, was sold to Dr. F. W. Keel for $627.25 plus $25 for the furnace and $40 for the brick, or $692.25. Piatt County aid to dependent children, 181, was $3,107, and old age pensions for 449 persons were $14,509. Total amount for the state was $3,878,069. 30 children are enrolled in the kindergarten class, which opened Monday at Lincoln School. Catherine Valentine is in charge, assisted by Carolyn Moore. Poppy sales netted $235, and 1,500 poppies were sold, an increase over last year. The 1945 Southern Illinois peach crop promises to be one of the largest ever harvested. PFC Edward Foran, prisoner of the Germans since August 4, 1944, has been liberated and is back in the U.S. Compiled by Kay Gilbreth. 50 years ago, plans for the coming July 3rd and 4th celebration headlined by lightly attended monthly meeting of the Chamber of Commerce. Tom Sullen reported on Chamber plans for the celebration during the 2 days on the evening of July 3rd. The Chamber will sponsor its second annual Miss Teenage Monticello contest. On the 4th, there will be a number of activities at Forest Preserve Park. All-Star Little League Baseball begins at 1:30, followed by a watermelon eating contest, sack races, tug of war, and nail driving contest. Pony League uniforms have been passed out, and the local entry in the Tri-County Pony League was to have played its first game of the season Wednesday evening, according to a report from team manager Bob Scott. Members of the Monticello Tennis Club have been playing doubles challenge matches for the past 3 weeks. Each player has teamed up with other players, and the resulting teams have been ranked on a challenge ladder. Each time a lower-ranking team defeats a higher-ranking duo, the rankings are revised accordingly. Rankings are as follows. 1. Riley Hudson. 2. Searman Riley. 3. Barnes Hudson. 4. Rice Hudson. Last week's softball action saw the Monticello Merchants winning 2 tilts while losing three to run their season record to 10 victories against 5 defeats. Compiled by Jack Stiverson. 25 years ago, the Illinois Department of Transportation has recently announced that the mile and exit numbers on Interstate Route 72 between Springfield and Champaign will be renumbered. The 2 exits for Monticello, Exit 61 and Exit 63, will become Exit 164 and 166. Navy Seaman recruit David M. Chapman, son of Greg and Cheryl Chapman of Atwood, recently completed U.S. Navy basic training at Recruit Training Command in Great Lakes. He is a 1993 graduate of Atwood Hammond High School. The circus goes on at Rayville, a miniature town created by Rayville Railroad Museum curator Ray McIntyre, who will turn 88 on June 8th. As the years go by, maintenance for the little town becomes more difficult. "I think old age is creeping up on me," he says. Rayville is located at 217 West Washington, Monticello. The Piatt Promenaders Square Dance Club will meet June 9th at the Monticello Community Building. Caller will be Clyde Stocker. The spirit of Marilyn Monroe returned to Bement this week as a new commemorative stamp was issued on June 1, 1995 by the United States Postal Service. Postal patrons lined up to be some of the first to purchase the 32-cent stamp. Many who saw Monroe in Bement in 1955 were among the first to purchase the collector's stamps. Compiled by Deanna O'Reilly. Isolation Journal by Clara Rudolph. Friday, May 29th. Today was our last day up north. We made a small bonfire on the beach and roasted s'mores. After that, the older people sat in the kitchen talking and drinking strawberry malts. It was a sugar overload, but I loved every second of it. More important than the tasty treats was being with family. My little cousins sat on the beach with us, and they snarfed down chocolate as they watched the fire with fascination. I was almost set on fire by a 2-year-old, but aside from that, it was enjoyable to sit near the embers with a cool lake breeze to balance its strength. I'll miss the sights and sounds here, but I'm also glad to return home. Traveling allows me to appreciate everything about the environment I live in. The only downside to returning is the car ride. I'm not prepared for another car ride with 6 of my siblings. No silence, no space, not enough entertainment, and way too many people. Saturday, May 30th. We woke up at 6 in the morning today so we could eat breakfast and finish loading up the bags. By 6:45, we were on our way homeward. The journey definitely went quicker than the way up, but it still seemed to drag on nonetheless. The beginning was peaceful. Some kids tried to return to sleep, and others were content to sit and look out the windows, marveling at the beauty. I could read my books, which is rare in a car ride due to high noise levels. However, after about 3 hours in, the car was exploding with noise and chaos. Some people were whining, others were bickering, and the sound of movies just added to the mix. I sought to find the closest thing to silence, which turned out to be playing the sound of an ocean or fan on my phone and plugging in my earbuds. We only stopped twice, once for lunch and once for a bathroom break. The trip felt like years, so it goes without saying that arriving at home was a glorious experience. I never appreciate my home as much as I do when returning from travels. It reminds me of all the aspects I take for granted. The trip was fun, but it was definitely time to return, and I'm so glad not to be stuck in a car any longer. Sunday, May 31st. Today is yet another birthday in the Rudolph household. Andrew turned 18 today. I'm now the oldest kid in the family. My older siblings are all legally adults now. That's astounding to think about. I drove to Allerton to run today, and I've never seen it swarming with this many people. There were pedestrians and cars everywhere. It was hard to find a parking spot. People of every age, mask or no mask, were crawling along the trails. To be honest, there were too many people. There wasn't enough room to run without bumping into others every 5 minutes or so. However, the muddy parts of the trails fended people off. Nobody wanted to hike through giant puddles and slippery mud, so that's where I completed most of my run. Well, that's all we have time for today. This has been Paula Kaufman, reading stories from May 28th through June 3rd from the Journal Republican. Please stay well. I look forward to reading with you again soon.